Good morning, everybody, and welcome to episode 12 of our live monthly Q&A with Sinton's Wills Trust and Estates team. I'm David Pritchard, Head of Marketing here at Sinton's, joined again today by my colleague Lauren Code, who is an associate in the Wills Trust and Estates team at Sinton's, and she's on the screen there in front of you, so you see who's going to be speaking to you again this morning. Same format as with all of our previous sessions. In front of you are three questions that you have sent to us over the course of the last month. So thank you very much for that. Thank you for continuing to send those in. And Lauren is going to work through them on this very sunny Friday in August. So enough from me. Lauren, good morning and over to you.
Morning. Thanks, David. And thank you, everyone, for joining me today. So we've had quite a lot of questions recently regarding wills. So you'll see there's a couple of questions about wills today, and then a final one about funerals, which is, again, is a very topical subject. So first question is about including stepchildren in a will. So this is one that does catch quite a lot of people out, especially if they've tried to do a will at home themselves, or they've bought a kit from somewhere, or used someone who's kind of not particularly qualified in the area of wills. A lot of people do think that if they just leave their estate to their children, that this would include anyone they deemed to be their child. And actually, that's not correct. The legal definition of children in a will includes your biological children and your children who've adopted. So if you've been for the formal adoption process, they will also be classed as your children. But it wouldn't include any stepchildren. So in other words, if you have got a partner and you kind of have always deemed their children to be your own, if you don't make specific provision for them in the will, they wouldn't be included in the standard definition of children. So as I said, it's really important that you seek professional advice on this. Make sure that you tell your legal advisor about the fact you want to include your stepchildren. There's a few ways to do it. So sometimes in the will, we'll amend the definition of children to make sure that stepchildren are included. Or sometimes it might be better to actually name each child to make sure that they would definitely receive the benefit of your estate. Of course, this can work in favour for some people. Some people don't want their stepchildren to receive the estate at all. They want their own children to benefit, and perhaps not that of the blended family. So sometimes it can work for the best, but as I said, it does catch people out. So definitely speak to a proper legal advisor if you do have more of a blended family and a complex setup, to make sure that everyone who you want to benefit will benefit. The next question is about household possessions and household contents. And again, this is something which can seem really simple on the face of it, but does catch a lot of people out. And I know particularly our contentious probate team do see a lot of disputes about possessions in a house. The kind of starting point is anything in your house, such as your furniture, collections of anything, your photographs, anything that you may have in your house is a chattel on death. So you can, if you want to, leave those possessions to beneficiaries. Sometimes people simply say to us, I don't really mind what happens to the things in my house. I'm happy just for my children to go in, take what they want, and sort out the rest. Sometimes if people do have a lot of valuables in the house, it can be really important for them to make sure that they specifically gift things, particularly if they've got antique furniture, or they've got a collection that's quite valuable and special to them. They need to make sure that it's specifically set out in the will what happens to that. Even if you think I kind of am happy for my children to come in and sort everything out in the house, which on the face of it seems like a simple instruction, again, that can cause quite a lot of disputes. Do you want your children to literally come in and take anything that they want according to value? So what if one child wants to take £1,000 worth of possessions, the other child might get less? Are you happy with that? Do you want there to be a particular order in which your children can come in and take things, perhaps starting with the eldest and then working on a rotation basis? Are there going to be things which your children may argue about? So perhaps if you've always promised a painting to one child, but you don't mention it in the will, is that going to cause arguments? Sometimes people will do a letter of wishes to accompany the will and try and detail what they want particular beneficiaries to get. I've had it where people have just literally listed room by room everything in the house and who they would like to get what. I've had a client recently who has taken photographs and they've written on the back of the photographs who they want to get those particular items. Things like that can work really well because you're setting out quite clearly your wishes. It won't be legally binding if it's just a letter of wishes or photographs, but it's really helpful for your executors so that they know what you want to happen to those items and try and avoid any disputes. It also can be really important if you're married or in a partnership and you've been living together for quite a long time. Are there things that you have bought together or are there things that you have bought separately? You know, sometimes people have, say, sports memorabilia or, you know, ladies might have items of clothing, bags, shoes, etc., that are very clearly separate items. But again, if you have got that blended marriage and you've got children on either side, is there going to be an argument as to who gets what? What belongs to the mum? What belongs to the dad? So again, it's something that, as I said, on the face of it does seem really simple, but actually the advice is always to really think about it. Make sure as far as possible that you avoid any arguments over who gets what in the house. Speak to your legal advisor and talk about what you want to happen and they can let you know how best to deal with it in the will. And then the last question is talking about payment of funerals. So again, very often when a person dies, one of the first questions we get is about the funeral and how to arrange it and how to pay for it. And understandably, that is quite a big concern for people. Funeral costs are significant and they're continuing to rise, as is you know, a lot of things these days. And the first thing to say is that the funeral costs are actually paid from the deceased person's estate. So if it is your parents who have died and you're worried about paying for the funeral, you can actually pay for the funeral costs from their bank accounts or whatever assets they have to pay for it. Although the advice is always to freeze the bank accounts after death, the banks will allow you to pay for the funeral director's invoice from that bank account. So you're not going to be stuck without access to the bank to pay for that funeral. As I said, the bank or building society will allow you to send them a copy of the invoice and they will pay that directly to the funeral director. So as I said, if it is a couple of £1,000, you don't have to necessarily worry about paying for it yourself. You can pay for it from their account. Now, that's all well and good, but if a person dies and they simply don't have any money to pay the funeral, what can you do then? So there are a few options. The first is if you, as the kind of executor next of kin, are on certain benefits, so if you're on pension credit, universal credit, that sort of thing, you may be entitled to a funeral payment to help you cover the cost of the funeral. So you'd need to go on gov.uk, look at the guidance on there, see if you're eligible, and they may be able to give you a payment to help pay for those costs. The next thing to look at is if you know that your parent had a strong desire for their body to be donated to be used for medical science, medical research, potentially, once you have donated their body, the institution may then dispose of the body once they have done the necessary research without a cost to you. Now, obviously, that doesn't work for everyone. You know, there's certain circumstances where they can't take the body and you know, it might not have been your parents' wish at all for that to happen. But if you know that that's what your parent did want, maybe they've either told you or it's written in the will. As I said, very often, if that is a route you can go down, the institution in question can carry out the necessary work and then they will dispose of the body without a cost. The final thing to mention is if there is a person who has died and there is no next of kin or no next of kin who is willing to take responsibility for arranging the funeral. The local authority do provide a service where they'll arrange a funeral for a person, as I said, if there's simply no one there to do it. It's kind of a very, very basic funeral, understandably, for local authority paying for it, and they will try and recover those costs from the estate if possible. But it is there to help those situations where unfortunately people do die and perhaps they're maybe estranged from their children, or there's just no one there available to sort it out. The local authority do have a responsibility to make sure there is some kind of funeral in place, and they will fund that. But as I said, they will try and recover any costs from the estate if they can. So with that question, as I said, there are things that that can be done, but the main thing is that the costs come from the estate itself rather than from you as the executor and the person arranging it. So thank you very much for listening today, and I'll now pass you back to David.
Thanks very much, Lauren. Enjoyed listening to that one, as always. Very quickly for me, we continue to work hard to produce, release and deliver useful and relevant content, articles, podcasts, blogs, all of which can be found on our website, www.sintons.co.uk, should you wish to take a look. And that includes all 12 episodes of this live Q&A session. I've just popped Lauren's contact details back on the screen there if you'd like to get in touch with her about anything she's raised today, or indeed anything in any of our sessions. Please don't hesitate. Telephone number there, 091226 3807, and just to add her email, lauren.code@sintons.co.uk. And if you haven't had enough of us by that point, you can also follow the team on Twitter at Sintons Law or at Sintons PC. That's it from us today. We will be back with you in September. Usual format, three questions. As I said at the outset, thank you so much for continuing to send these questions in. We have such a back catalogue of things that we're trying to work through for you. Generally appreciate the amount of people that are continuing to tune in live. We've got record numbers again here today, but also the people that are tuning in and watching them afterwards. Generally, it's quite staggering. So thank you for that. We don't take it for granted. On behalf of Lauren and I, enjoy your weekend, enjoy the rest of the summer, and we will speak to you next month. Take care, everyone. Thank you.